Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet him, greet him, treat him, and street him. Today's date is December 21st, 2014, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Why Can't This Be Love? Early Goal-Directed Dating in the Treatment of Singledom and Severe Loneliness for Physicians. Our guest skeptic today is, wait for it, Dr. Bond, Dr. Chris Bond. Chris is a clinical lecturer and emergency physician at the University of Calgary. He's a foam blogger and has his own site called Sock Mob. He's also a dogma basher and wine and food super geek. Welcome back to the SGM, Chris.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
Hey, you're going to have to explain, what does Sock Mob mean?
So Sock Mob is standing on the corner minding your own business. You may have heard one or two patients tell you that they were doing that right before they got stabbed in your career.
Well, it's one of the biggest risk factors. I think it's got a positive likelihood ratio of affinity of getting your ass kicked if you're just standing on the corner minding your own business.
I would 100% agree with that statement.
Now, the last time you were here, we did a podcast on acute pericarditis called Achy Breaky Heart.
That's right, Ken. That was a pretty great episode. We looked at whether colchicine was more effective in combination with standard anti-inflammatory therapy for acute pericarditis than standard anti-inflammatory therapy alone.
Hey, can you just give us the bottom line from that podcast?
Yeah, the bottom line was that colchicine is pretty awesome. And when you add it to standard anti-inflammatory management with GI prophylaxis, it prevents recurrence or refractory pericarditis symptoms with an amazing NNT of 5.
Yeah, we don't get a lot of NNTs of 5 around here. So this is going to be the second Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine Hot Off the Press, or SGM Hop episode. Now, usually we're trying to cut that knowledge translation window down from over 10 years to less than 1 year.
Exactly. But with the SGM Hop, we're going to cut that knowledge translation window down to less than 1 week.
Ooh, less than 1 week. I don't think it gets better than that. And this is done by getting copies of an important EM manuscript prior to publication.
Yep, and then we're going to do a structured critical review using a method that has been shown to be validated and reliable.
Now, the first SGM Hop on Geriatric Falls with Dr. Chris Carpenter, or Captain Cranium, as I like to call him, was a huge success.
Yeah, that was a pretty cool podcast. And the most interesting finding was that the inability to cut one's own toenails had the best negative likelihood ratio for 6-month fall risk.
And where are you going to find out that information unless you're listening to some of the foamy goodness that's going around the world? Cutting someone's toenails. What was the bottom line? Do you remember what was the bottom line from this first SGM Hop article?
Yeah, I remember listening to it and I was like, seems like we don't really have much good emergency department evidence to help us predict accurately or reliably who's at risk of falling. High quality research is needed for healthcare providers and funders and guideline developers to use in deriving screening protocols.
Well, let's get on with this second SGM Hop, but it's going to be a special one given that it's the holiday season.
Yep. Every year, the BMJ, or British Medical Journal, publishes a special 2-week issue over the Christmas and New Year. This edition always contains some very entertaining research projects.
Yeah, one of the best ones I remember was the parachute trial.
Yeah, that one was pretty awesome.
Yeah, they did this systematic review looking at whether or not parachutes actually could prevent death or major trauma related to what they referred to as gravitational challenges.
Yeah, there's no definite evidence on this subject. Case reports do exist of people surviving falls from an airplane without a parachute.
And you know, there's other case reports of people wearing parachutes who have major morbidity and mortality.
Yeah, so they suggested they should probably do a double-blinded, randomized, placebo-controlled crossover trial.
Yeah, and guess what their population was? They were going to get evidence-based medicine experts and randomize them into having a parachute or the placebo, a backpack.
Seems pretty reasonable to me. They'd all be flown up in the plane and then jump out.
Yeah, and the individuals that survive the first one, they would just randomize them into the opposite group, fly them up in that plane again, and have them jump out.
Yeah, then we would definitely have definitive evidence that parachutes reduce the risk of orthopedic, head, soft tissue injury, and mortality after gravitational challenge.
This was a great example of some of the limits of evidence-based medicine, and obviously we can't do these types of trials when it involves harm. But Chris, we've also done a couple of the BMJ Christmas editions on the SGEM as a pubcast. Not a podcast, but we've done actually a couple pubcasts. And the first one, of course, was done in Oxford, England at the evidence-based medicine course.
Yeah, that study was called Orthopedic Surgeons, As Strong as an Ox and Almost Twice as Clever, Multicenter Prospective Comparative Study by Subramanian et al. In the BMJ 2011.
I love the author's conclusions. Quote, male orthopedic surgeons have greater intelligence and grip strength than their male anesthetic colleagues, who should find new ways of making fun of their orthopedic friends.
The other study you did on a BMJ holiday issue was called Pain Over Speed Bumps and Diagnosis of Acute Appendicitis, a Diagnostic Accuracy Study. That was in the Christmas issue of BMJ in 2012.
And it had a sensitivity of 97% and a specificity of 30% for if you had pain going over a speed bump on the way to the hospital for ruling in for appendicitis. What was really great is the absence of pain had the best negative likelihood ratio of 0.1. The speed bump test outperformed migratory pain, nausea and vomiting, and rebound tenderness. So in the spirit of the parody issue of the BMJ Holiday Edition, we give you the Holiday Edition of the SGEM HOP, cutting that KT window down to less than 1 week. And guess what? We have the lead author from the paper we're going to review, Dr. Teresa Chan. Teresa is an assistant professor at McMaster University, and her research focuses on a number of different areas, including competency assessments and modeling in residency education, and social media teaching and learning. Welcome to the SGEM, Teresa.
Thanks for having me on your show, Ken.
Now, Teresa, you seem to be involved in almost everything, and you're involved in one key project called the Canadian Association of Emergency Physicians as an Education Champion, and you're the co-lead of the Education Innovation Project. Can you give us your elevator pitch on what this CAPE initiative is all about?
Yeah, so actually myself and Julian Potras from Laval are working on a project that features two kind of really cool things that we can do with education. The first is actually the GEMS series, which is very much inspired by the SGEM, where we're looking at translating and cutting the KT window down for educational research. And so every month there is a summary of an important piece of medical education literature that we've summarized and reviewed, very much the same way that you do on your podcast, Ken. So I think that kudos to you for inspiring us on that.
Well, I like that. You're just missing the S for skepticism.
Exactly. We're pretty nice when it comes to education, so I guess we dropped the skeptical part. But the other part, and you're involved with this, is the Featured Education Innovations Project, which on a monthly basis, and much to the envy of our American colleagues, we are actually highlighting a unique initiative at each of the Canadian Emergency Medicine Education programs across the country. And so what it is that we ask these schools to contribute one really good thing that they're doing that's awesome, and feature that in both a write-up on the CAPE website, which is free to the whole world, so very foamy, and also they are featured in something called CAPEcast with you to talk about their initiative and really go behind the scenes to see how they actually pulled it off.
I love all that foamy goodness, and I'm so pleased to be involved because I'm learning about the amazing, the awesome, the exceptional emergency medicine education that's taking place across Canada.
Speaking of behind the scenes, there's this whole initiative that Eve Purdy's been involved in over at her blog, Manu et Cordi. Can you tell us a bit about that and the ITAD decision tool?
Yeah, so I think it actually began with the Johnson-Purdy nomogram, where Eve and her colleague, Heather Johnson, medical students at Queen's University, actually pioneered the idea of using common social encounters, such as dating, to explain complicated evidence-based medicine principles. Their first paper actually has been just published in the holiday section of the CMAJ, Canadian Medical Association Journal, in the most recent edition on December 9th, where they actually explain likelihood ratios and how that works for the dating scene. So using a date as a test and whether or not it would change the date's pre-date possibility or post-date possibility.
So yeah, what's this Canadian ITAD decision tool?
Yeah, so the ITAD decision tool was the next in their series, and that would be the Canadian quote-unquote, is this a date decision tool? And so jokingly, Purdy and Johnson have noticed that there are some ambiguities when it comes to certain social encounters between two people. It can be unclear at times whether or not it's truly a date or if it's just two people, for instance, getting ice cream. And so they derived this clinical decision tool, just much in the way you might risk stratify or decide upon whether or not someone needs a CT head. They were very much inspired by the decision tool industry, let's say, in order to create this. And so it can be found, again, on their blog, Menu et Corde. And what it comes down to is you are probably on a date if your total score is over 100. And the date is probably not the case if your score is under 70. And if you actually have a score between 70 and 100, then you actually need to apply a gold standard test, such as asking, is this a date?
I will put the ITAD decision tool into the show notes so people can get all the details. But I have to tell you, I am so pleased they called it a clinical decision tool, not a rule. But Teresa, we've got to get to your paper. So now you've come up with this early goal-directed dating protocol?
And that's right, Ken. Early goal-directed dating.
Yes, Jim's covered a number of early goal-directed therapy papers this year.
Yeah, we did the process trial called Cry Me a River with Sunil Upadhyay from the Beam Group.
Yeah, that was one of two really big trials comparing sepsis care to quote-unquote usual care or EGDT. The first one was PROCESS, and then the second one in the past year was the ARISE trial.
Yeah, and the bottom line from both of these trials was that invasive early goal-directed therapy-based sepsis resuscitation was not superior to usual care. The key elements to sepsis care were early recognition, liberal use of IV fluid resuscitation, get a lactate level, empiric antibiotics, and admit to an appropriate care setting.
That's right, Ken. But let's go back to Teresa. So Teresa, you've created an early goal-directed dating protocol, I understand?
That's right.
Now hold up here. Before we get started, can you just give us a case scenario, Teresa? Because we need to frame this discussion.
Imagine you have Jason, who is a cardiology fellow. Despite knowing everything about the heart, he still finds himself struggling with his own. He can easily recite the pathway of the electrical currents from the SA node through the atria to the AV node through the bundle of His and the Purkinje fibers, but he becomes easily lost when required to navigate the path in a relationship. He has recently been on a couple of dates with a special someone, but doesn't know what the next step is.
Great. How about some more background on the topic?
Yeah, so in our paper, it was a parody of course, the early goal-directed therapy paper, and it can be found on Eve's blog, which is Menu et Corde, and the paper addresses the systematic assumption that one must be in a relationship in order to be fulfilled, which is rampant in Western culture. But the many hours that young physicians spend in ICUs and ERs and hospital wards and in their offices often results in missing out on some key milestones and skill development that are necessary for successful relationships. We ventured that the early goal-directed dating protocol may support physicians as they navigate the complicated relationship waters and ultimately improve relationship outcomes. This mixed methods papers first used qualitative methods to develop the algorithm and then was validated against retrospective recollections of physicians in order to validate whether or not it actually rung true with current relationship status.
So what's the clinical question we'll be trying to answer on this holiday edition of the SGM HOP?
Well, the clinical question is, what are the key components and milestones that increase the likelihood of marriage or cohabitation?
And what is the reference for this hot off the press article?
Yeah, there's no PMID for this, but you can check it out on Eve Purdy's blog.
All right, Teresa, let's go through the PICO statement then. What was the population studied?
So the population studied was the medical students, trainees, and physicians as defined as single or in a successful relationship of all sexes, races, genders, training programs, and sexual orientation. The only people that were excluded were those with Facebook statuses that were, quote unquote, it's complicated because they're just too hard to understand.
What was the intervention?
The intervention was the derivation of the protocol and then applied in a post hoc retrospective manner.
And the comparison?
Those that were or were not in a relationship.
And what was the outcome?
The outcome was that those who were successful in fulfilling the criteria of reaching marriage or cohabitation, whether or not they actually used the algorithm.
So what were your conclusions?
We conclude that the use of goal-directed dating at the earliest stages of a nascent interpersonal romantic relationship may result in more clarity and results with regards to the outcome measures of marriage or cohabitation. A prospective study on this algorithm compared to standard dating practices is needed in order to determine the veracity of our claims.
All right, well, we need to go through 12 quality checklist questions for cohort studies. Chris, do you want to lead them off?
Question number one, did the review ask a clearly focused question?
Yes, they did, Chris.
Number two, did the authors use an appropriate method to answer the question?
No. The retrospective nature of the study is exceptionally susceptible to recall bias. A prospective RCT with early stage relationship is needed.
Was the cohort recruited in an acceptable way?
Well, I mean, come on. It's a parody study, but I really don't see a better way than just hanging out with a bunch of friends in casual conversations and trying to recruit them into your early goal-directed dating protocol.
Seems reasonable. The next question was the exposure accurately measured to minimize bias?
No. The exposure is something similar to early goal-directed dating algorithm versus not, i.e. recall bias.
Right. And was the outcome accurately measured to minimize bias?
So I'm going to have to say yes. Single versus not.
Have the authors identified all important confounding factors, and were these taken into account in the design?
No. I mean, if confounding factors were considered, there would be like way too many to account for. This is, of course, why we need a really large randomized control trial.
Was the follow-up of subjects complete and long enough?
Well, as a retrospective study, there was no follow-up as needed. Duration from exposure to outcome measurement is very important in this case, however. Ideally, a long-term study of person-centered outcomes is needed to ensure happiness over a significant period of time.
And what are the results of this study?
All those in a successful relationship endorsed the algorithm.
How precise are the results?
The authors state that they are confident, but there was no intervals given.
That would be the best way to report confidence intervals, I think.
Yeah, I'm really, really confident.
All right, do you believe the results?
As always, you have to ask yourself, does this make sense? The algorithm does make sense, but it was only retrospectively validated in a biased fashion. The other important consideration is that the successful outcome measure, being in a relationship, may be a completely invalid endpoint. What they really should do is measure happiness, not relationship status.
Can the results of this be applied to the local population?
It is relevant to the Canadian trainees and to young physicians, but it would need to be seen if this is prospectively validated before it's ready for prime time.
And the final question, do the results of this study fit with the available evidence?
Yes, previously published works on this study, which we were discussing before, the ITAD decision rule and the evidence-based dating, the Johnson-Purdy normogram, highlighted the need for such algorithms, and this piece nicely builds on the growing evidence in this field.
So the key results were an EGDD, or early goal-directed dating algorithm, when applied early in a relationship, may result in more clarity and results with respect to outcome measures of marriage or cohabitation. Teresa, do you want to take us through this?
Yeah, so the algorithm is probably a very much a visual that you should check out. But the first step is to make eye contact and or flirt a bit with a prospective date-worthy candidate. then the next step is to drum up courage to approach and exchange contact information, after which then contacting the new candidate of interest with some benign, non-invasive manner, such as texting, hey, might be an appropriate next step in the algorithm. And then after that, the first date is set. And if your heart rate is over 100 at this point, you should take a deviation into a sidebar where you need to take a deep breath and consult your friends for advice. After which, if the first date is successful, they might end in a kiss, and therefore you might define the relationship as possibly being something that is a prospective. And at some point, you probably need to decide whether or not you're a one-horse kind of cowboy or cowgirl, in which case then you need to discuss monogamy and decide if that's applicable or desired. At this point in the algorithm, their Facebook status has changed. And that results in the discussion of whether or not this is a serious relationship. And again, there's deviation into meeting parents, PRN, discussing how to amalgamate lives, PRN. And this ends usually in a proposal of marriage or cohabitation, in which case the endpoint goals are achieved. Now, at any point in this algorithm, if you're just not feeling it or you want to run away, then you probably do need to start back up at the and contact a new candidate of interest in that benign, non-invasive manner again.
Yeah, I like how you have all these outs in it. After the first kiss, if your heart rate isn't over 100 and you're just not feeling it, you just go back to the top again. And then after the first kiss, if you're still not feeling it because they're a bad kisser, again, go back to the top. After you've changed the Facebook status into a serious relationship, there may be a moment where you want to run away. And again, you go back to the top. And then when the question of proposed marriage or cohabitation comes up, it's like, panic. Again, you can exit the algorithm and go back to the top. Isn't that correct, Teresa?
Exactly. So there's a bunch of different exit points along the way.
All right. Well, we usually have some SGEM commentary at this point. And so I'll lead it off, Chris. This was a small study, but it did ask a very important question. What are the key components or milestones that increase the likelihood of marriage or cohabitation?
But there were so many limits to this study, Ken.
Well, yes, Chris. This is definitely a study that's wrought with limitations. And in fact, we admitted that our limitations were, quite frankly, limitless. First of all, it's a fictional work of parody.
Yeah, I think it's important to note that no persons were harmed in making this joke article, and hence the data is completely and utterly the result of the author's speculation.
Secondly, a retrospective cohort study is not truly an optimal study design to derive or test such an algorithm.
You did mention that budgetary limitations precluded a more robust study, but admittedly, a more robust study with a randomized, controlled, prospectively gathered design would require a substantial population, akin to the subject enrollment of, say, the CRASH II study.
A longitudinal study with more robust follow-up is definitely required in order to know if there's any mortality or morbidity, such as heartbreak or separation or divorce, that occurs as a difference between groups. And so there is still a possibility that a resultant relationship may only be temporary and upon ending may yield actually further complications down the road. So I think that these longitudinal studies of outcomes are very important, and especially in something as important as a relationship.
Chris, can you comment on the author's conclusions compared to our conclusions?
Yes, we agree with the author's conclusion, but we eagerly anticipate the results of the process trial that will compare EGDD to usual practices in a head-to-head prospective fashion.
Teresa, can you give us a bottom line from your study?
So I think that the bottom line in this parity study is to remember that, one, you need to pick an appropriate outcome. So for instance, in this case, is happiness the actual outcome and is relationship status just a surrogate outcome? And I think that we've pointed that out today in this episode of SGEM Hop. And I think that the other part of it is that number two, you need to pick an appropriate study design. And so whereas this study design may help you derive an algorithm, it may not be sufficient to prove effectiveness or efficacy of an algorithm. So you need to make sure that you have a proper study design that tests the hypothesis that you're trying to entertain. So number three would be that evidence needs to be skeptically analyzed, and even parity studies need to be held up to a higher standard when you're looking at actual outcomes that may be of interest.
I love the fact that you want to encourage people to be skeptical, even of parity journal articles.
Great work, Teresa. Can you give us a case resolution?
Okay, so the case resolution is that Jason, being up to date on the literature, decided to apply the early goal-directed dating algorithm. He realized that the next best step was to communicate clearly with the person of interest about the status of their relationship. Together, they decided they would change their Facebook statuses, and they have been progressing down the early goal-directed dating algorithm ever since.
Now, at this point in the podcast, we usually have a section that says, what am I going to tell the patient? How am I going to talk to them in English, not in medical terms? So, Teresa, what would you tell friends when it comes to this early goal-directed dating algorithm?
Don't stress too much and have fun. Remember, all the steps along the way are part of the journey, and I think that they're kind of important. So enjoy every part of it.
Excellent. So it's sort of like don't panic, one of the themes of the SGEM.
Exactly.
So this brings us to the Keener contest. And last week's Keener, or Gunner if you're listening in the US, was Dr. Ben Williams from Nanaimo, BC. That's British Columbia. He knew that the 1918 flu pandemic was also called the Spanish flu. Chris, what is the Keener Gunner contest question for this holiday edition of the SGEM Hop?
According to scientists in Norway, how many bacteria are transferred between partners in a standardized 10-second French kiss?
Ooh, or in Canada, we would call that tonsil hockey.
Everything has to be related to hockey in Canada, even kissing.
So if you know the answer to this week's Keener Gunner contest, then send me an email to thesgem@gmail.com and use Keener or Gunner in the subject line. The first person to correctly answer this SGEM Hop Holiday Edition question will receive a cool skeptical prize. Now, there's some conferences I wanted to tell you about. The first one is Ski Beam, January 26th to 28th in lovely British Columbia. And there's some other conferences. Chris?
Shock and Resuscitation is May 1st to 3rd in Montreal.
And then, of course, there's the SMAC, Social Media and Critical Care Meeting in Chicago, June 23rd to 26th. And if you have not seen The Cup Song with Eve Purdy, I suggest you check out my YouTube channel.
And Ken, don't forget about the Canadian Association of Emergency Physicians meeting, Lighting the Way in Edmonton on May 30th to June 3rd of 2015.
Thank you, Chris, for helping me do the SGEM Hop.
No problem, Ken. Happy to be here as always.
You know, in the new year, we're going to be doing some really serious EM publications.
That's right. We're going to be reviewing some papers hot off the press from the Canadian Journal of Emergency Medicine. So stay tuned and catch us in early 2015.
Teresa, thank you for all you're doing for emergency medicine education. You are incredible. I mean, I can't believe all the great things you're doing with CAPE, Allium, and so many other groups.
Well, thank you very much, Ken. It's always fun to work with you on all these projects as well. So thanks for having me on this show.
And as our extra special guest, will you say the SGEM tagline?
Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next week.